This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. The Wells Fargo Stagecoach has been traveling the country doing damage control in the form of full-page newspaper ads and commercials on TV.
Wells Fargo is making changes to make things right. First, all customers who have been impacted will be fully refunded.
It was discovered that the bank opened accounts without their customers' knowledge, resulting in the firing of thousands of employees and the resignation of their CEO.
We've eliminated product sales goals for our retail bankers to ensure your interests are put first. We're taking action. We're renewing our commitment to you.
Well, it remains to be seen just how effective this mea culpa campaign will be, either in restoring customer trust or the reputation of the bank and the banking industry, which has already suffered mightily from the financial meltdown of 8 years ago. Charlotte has been a big part of Wells since they rescued the failing Wachovia at the height of the financial crisis. That rescue was touted as the perfect marriage of corporate cultures. But former Wachovia employees and some customers noticed the difference almost immediately. So this hour, we look at what happened, at what's being done to correct the failings at Wells Fargo, and at the effect this has had on the bank and its employees and customers here in Charlotte, and on banking around the country. Rick Rothacker is an investigative reporter with the Charlotte Observer and author of Banktown, The Rise and Struggles of Charlotte's Big Banks. Welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
He joins us in our Spirit Square studio along with Hillary Burns. She covers banking for the Charlotte Business Journal. Welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
And Dion Roberts is a banking reporter at the Charlotte Observer as well. Good morning to you.
Good morning. Thanks for having us again.
Good to see you again. So how long, let's just go back a little bit very quickly. How long has it been since it was discovered that this was going on, this cross-selling that led to bogus accounts at Wells Fargo, and who discovered it?
About 2 months since the bank was fined $185 million from regulators.
Really? It seems like 8 months or 10 months.
It does.
Only two. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, it's been out there, though. The interesting thing is the settlement hit September 8th, but this has been out since at least 2013.
Okay.
LA Times did a big story about a lot of the pressure, the sales pressure, and I think that's part of the anger over this is that here they are finally settling, and what have they been doing since 2013 to fix this problem? And ultimately, we saw John Stumpf lose his job, the former CEO.
So when John Stumpf appeared before Congress, and he testified before two committees, one in the House and one in the Senate, did he tell the absolute truth as we know it to be now, or did he kind of slide on some things? I mean, because he knew about it. Evidently, he knew about it for a long time and did nothing about it.
Well, he faced a lot of questions of, you know, what did you know and when did you know it? And essentially said 2013, sort of this came to our attention, and then it got to the board. And I think everyone in general, even Warren Buffett, their biggest investor, said they, you know, it was a terrible thing and they really didn't do much about it once they did know about it. I think that's almost the biggest problem.
He said they made a terrible mistake, and the worst mistake was that he didn't correct the problem.
But there, you know, there have been news reports since the fine was announced September 8th. There have been news reports that show that your correspondence was sent maybe to executives, maybe even Kerry Tolstad, who ran the community bank, going back, you know, maybe 2006. So, you know, the question is, you know, exactly when did the executives at the highest level know about this?
So go ahead, Hillary.
I was just going to say, on Capitol Hill, Mr. Stumpf seemed to just not be aware of a lot of details. He was hazy on details, which I think a lot of people said probably hurt him in those testimonies.
So people like Kerry Tolstad, who was the head of the, I think, the retail bank, is that correct?
The community banking unit.
And she's the one that oversaw these cross-selling strategies that led to these bogus accounts. Evidently, the pressure on people in the bank at the retail level to bring more to sell more products and services to customers was intense. If you didn't do it every hour, you were in big trouble, evidently. Was that strictly to line her pocket and to make her look good with the higher-ups in the bank? I mean, is it strictly that? Is that all there is to this?
Well, I think it was a big part of their whole culture, and one of their – even when they bought Wachovia in 2008 was sort of a bragging point that we're able to sell – our customers have 8 products per customer. The East Coast, where Wachovia is, it's in the fours. You know, we've got a lot of improvement we can do out here on the East Coast. So it was, obviously, it helped, executive pay and bonuses. But I think the idea was that this is a good strategy. This is a way to make money if instead of going out and getting your credit card with Bank of America. You get it with Wells Fargo. That's good for us
at
the bank.
And was this a culture that came from Wells Fargo or the bank that bought Wells Fargo in the Midwest?
Well, it goes, you know, the whole cross-selling idea goes back to, you know, before John Stumpf, Dick Kovacevic, who was Stumpf's predecessor, he was very big on cross-selling, and I believe he's the one who started calling the branches stores.
Yes, and Norwest, the Minnesota bank you're talking about, they're the ones who bought Wells Fargo and took their name, just like First Union bought Wachovia and took their name. So really it goes back to Norwest. It's just really their culture.
So Wells, correct me if I'm wrong, is based in San Francisco still now?
That's right.
But in Charlotte, Charlotte is their biggest employee hub. They have 23,000 employees in the Charlotte region. And this scandal resulted in the firing of about 5,000 or so employees around the country. How many of those 5,000 were here? Do we know?
They have not broken it out at that level. They have talked about how California, Southern California, Arizona were real big hubs of this, but it was going on the East Coast as well. So as far as probably lost jobs, it's more West Coast.
Yeah. One thing that I found in a recent story that we wrote is that more than 60% of the regional bank presidents who were in place, you know, back in 2011, which is allegedly when the scandal began, are still with the bank.
Yeah. And Hillary, you said that Tim Sloan, who is the new CEO, has said that the bank will rehire any workers that it fired inappropriately for missing sales goals. Has that happened yet? And do we know if it involves anybody from here?
Yeah, the bank recently announced that, and they did say that they'll put tools in place in their HR department to help people who want to come forward and say, I think I was fired inappropriately. They say that they haven't found – we don't know exactly how many people that have come forward yet. I guess we'll see how that goes.
It'd be pretty embarrassing to come forward and then be turned down because they decide that that's not why you were fired. Since then, the bank has been fined $185 million. Its CEO, John Stumpf, has resigned. Tim Sloan has taken over. Mary Mack has replaced Carrie Tolstead as the head of the retail banking. She's from here?
She's based here. She's moving back here to take on this new role.
Was she with Wachovia or was she with, she was with Wachovia?
Yeah, she came from First Union, came up through Wachovia.
She's been there 30 years with the company.
So could she be determined then a culture changer because she's going to bring the East Coast perspective to the bank as opposed to the West Coast perspective?
That's a fair question since she has been with the bank for so long. What the bank is saying, she actually spoke at an industry conference in Boston last week and kind of went through her credentials because a lot of people are questioning why so many insiders are being promoted after this. And her claim to fame is that she has been through so much change at the bank through all the mergers. And I actually interviewed her, and she was out of a job a couple times after the mergers and had to reapply and everything. This was back. I talked to her a couple years ago. So her whole thing is she's used to change. She knows the business really well. So I guess we'll see what her strategy is as we learn more.
Plus, should she be considered a Wells Fargo insider or a First Union Wachovia insider? Really, I mean.
She's a little bit of both. I mean, she has that Wachovia background, which was known better for customer service. She really most recently came from the brokerage side of the business, so she wasn't as involved in the retail bank. But there's also sales goals in the brokerage side, which Dion's written a lot about. So
we're going to talk about that. But put this $185 million fine into some sort of perspective. This seems like walking up to Donald Trump and him giving you a penny.
Well,
that's how it would affect this bank.
They make more than $5 billion a quarter, so the money's not a big deal. Although at one point, you know, their stock's gone back up.
So why bother with $185 million fine? Why bother with it? It's nothing to them.
Well, I think that's been the issue where you see people say, you know, who should be going to jail and losing jobs and losing personal stock and things. But it's the biggest fine, I think, from the CFPB. So it did make a statement from that standpoint.
Was this criminal activity? Some have called this identity theft. Some have, because I think some customers were fined because they didn't pay their fees because they didn't know they had the accounts. Is that criminal activity?
Well, there are actually some class action suits, including one that was filed in North Carolina recently. That's one of the claims of the suit is this was identity theft, that these employees misappropriated customer information and opened accounts without their permission. And so we're seeing similar suits filed. There's one in Georgia. I think a few more have been filed in recent weeks. But that is an argument that's being made.
So then if it turns out to be determined that it's criminal activity, is it criminal activity on the part of the retail bank reps who opened these accounts or the people who were on top of them saying you must meet these sales quotas every day?
I think a lot of that is going to be determined, you know, in the coming weeks or months or whatever. You know, the Department of Justice is looking at this. California Attorney General is looking at this. North Carolina, same thing. I think Southern District of New York is also investigating this, but SEC. nothing's been announced yet as far as criminal charges. That doesn't mean that there won't be.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but Wells Fargo, I think, had a pretty good reputation with the outside world, right?
Yeah, and I was actually going to mention when we said, you know, why did this happen? Why was this culture in place? Well, one thing that analysts keep bringing up is that Wells Fargo doesn't have the big investment bank operations that a lot of its peers have on Wall Street that they kind of rely on to drive up revenue. So they really, the bread and butter of their business is the retail bank. So they sell was their mentality for so long.
Well, then was this an aberration or is this the result of bad policy or the result of a bad apple forcing this policy down
Maybe
the throats
both.
Of banking associates? What was this?
Well, I mean, the new CEO, Tim Sloan, has admitted that they do need to change their culture, that this was a problem, and, you know, executive accountability is still on the table. And certainly, I think John Stumpf got blamed for sort of putting the blame on the lower-level employees, and this is something that certainly went much higher
and
up.
And also, this now has the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency, which is a big federal regulator of banks, looking at practices at other banks. So mm-hmm. this is sort of turned the attention now to the whole banking, the biggest U.S. banks, and what are they, you know, do they have sort of reckless incentives programs as well?
Will this slow down in any way a push that may come from the Trump administration as we go forward to lessen the regulations on the banking industry? Will this slow that down?
Well, President-elect Trump has already talked about dismantling Dodd-Frank and bankers. I talked to a bunch of community bankers last week who really have felt the burden of regulation since they have smaller staffs and fewer resources. And they're optimistic that they are being realistic that the Dodd-Frank probably won't be dismantled. It's a huge piece of legislation that's taken years to implement. But they're hopeful it will at least reduce the load on them. So,
yeah,
I don't know what impact, you know, Trump will have on this Wells Fargo issue, because one thing that was said during the congressional hearings, and I think it might have been in the first hearing, the Senate banking hearing, was that, you know, Wells Fargo had done something rare, which was unify both sides of the aisle on an issue. So I think it's yet to be determined whether that'll change.
All of you are banking reporters for The Observer and for the Charlotte Business Journal, and I know you've been around for a while. I'm not saying that you may have heard about these practices going on while you were doing other things and covering the banking industry, but what did you hear about Wells Fargo, particularly from people at the bank who came from Wachovia and First Union? Were you hearing undercurrents, rumblings?
Well, I think from the start, Wells Fargo certainly came in. They were the bank that survived the financial crisis. They were, you know, saving Wachovia. We have a way of doing things. You know, we are better at cross-selling than you are. We're going to show you how to do it. It was their systems. It was their people. They moved people from the West Coast, the East Coast to oversee things. So you certainly had people saying, you know, these guys, they're in charge. They're telling us what to do. And I think Wachovia had really been proud and built up this customer service culture. And I think they did feel like it was being chipped away at.
And I wasn't covering banking during the financial crisis or even right after, but there was so much else going on in the industry, so many other issues that were taking the spotlight that maybe cross-selling wasn't bringing up any red flags at the time. I don't know.
And the fact that these people got bought out and rescued, that's saved a lot of jobs.
Well, a lot of Wachovia people would say, who are we to say anything?
Rick Rothacker from the Charlotte Observer here with Dion Roberts, also from the paper, and Hillary Burns from the Charlotte Business Journal. We're coming right back. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and the Iron Yard, using tech-focused education to create growth and mentorship for people and their ideas. Enrollment available for 12-week courses dedicated to teaching code and more in Charlotte. Information at theironyard.com/Charlotte. And Alpine Ski Center, outfitting skiers with performance outerwear, accessories, and snow sports gear for all ages. Open every day until Christmas. Well, 2 weeks ago, Democrats were set to win the presidential election. election, and pundits were talking about how Republicans would rebuild their party. Well, now the reverse is true, and though Hillary Clinton won the popular vote, the Democrats' blue wall turned red. What happened? Now Democrats find themselves engaged in a painful postmortem, which will include figuring out a way to win back the coalition they lost. A look at what a future Democratic Party may look like tomorrow on this program at 9.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, the president has a lot of authority over the government, but he also faces constraints from the courts, Congress, and existing laws. What a President Trump can and cannot do on his signature campaign promises, including trade, climate, and immigration.
Join the conversation on the Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon after Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about Wells Fargo and their return to respectability, or their attempted return to respectability after a scandal that involved cross-selling and opening bogus accounts and the firing of 5,000 employees and the resignation of their CEO and others. With Hillary Burns, banking reporter for the Charlotte Business Journal, Dion Roberts, banking reporter for The Observer, and Rick Rothacker, investigative reporter who also writes about banks and is the author of Banktown, The Rise and Struggles of Charlotte's Big Banks. This came, as we said, as the result of cross-selling. And there's nothing wrong with cross-selling of products. If you have a customer who opens a checking account, why not encourage them to get a debit card or to get a credit card or to open a savings account or to buy a CD or whatever the product or service may be? Does this practice continue now at Wells Fargo? Or are they too skittish to even mention that they have other products if you come in to open a checking account?
I think they still are looking for you to add these different products. The difference is, and Dion's written about this some, is that they've taken away the sales goals, because that's the big problem. Is cross-selling could be okay, but if you need to sell 10 accounts a day, that's when you get into trouble.
So I've spoken to employees since the scandal, and what the bank has done is it's started to reconfigure the way that, you know, bonuses are awarded. Now people are judged on customer service scores. Mm-hmm. There is some concern within the branches right now because customer service scores, according to employees I've spoken with, have fallen because of, you know, I guess customers are upset about the scandal. So, employees are worried about being able to get bonuses right now. But they're totally reconfiguring the way that bonuses are awarded.
One of your public, I think it was The Observer, wrote about a recent customer satisfaction survey of banks around the country. And I nearly fell off. I nearly spilled the coffee all over the floor. Citibank came out on top, followed by Wells, right? And then Bank of America tied with J.P. Morgan Chase. Those customer satisfaction surveys are done, obviously, with customers. And are they not rising because of things like being able to bank by phone? It's more convenient, and therefore they feel better about their bank, whatever bank they're with?
I think that's some of the thing that's helped them is that they are getting better at some of the technology that people want. Wells Fargo didn't rise as much as some of the other banks and Bank of America.
Because of this scandal?
Well, I think Dion wrote about this today a little bit, that it feel like it was less the scandal and more the other banks just kind of caught up with them a little bit.
Yeah, the issue, according to the American Customer Satisfaction Index, which did the ranking that you're referring to, Mike, the issue for Wells Fargo is just, you know, they only saw a 1-point increase in their customer satisfaction score, whereas other banks saw larger increases.
Okay. The Securities and Exchange Commission, Hillary, is probing the bank over these bogus accounts. Where does that stand? What are they looking for that the government didn't already know about when they fined them $185 million?
I don't think the SEC has said much about the investigation, but news reports have said that they're looking into whether Wells Fargo didn't disclose as much as they should to investors. So that's really what they're focused on, is what investors knew.
And is the SEC, it's hard for me to say, the SEC investigation likely to take a different course if it doesn't finish its job under the Obama administration?
It's hard to tell. That's an interesting point, because the way it's set up, it's a commission, and even Mary Jo White, who's leaving, I think knocked heads a lot with the Republicans and the Democrats trying to be kind of in the middle on that. So it could change. Like Dion was saying, this is sort of a scandal that's rubbed Democrats and Republicans the wrong way, so it might be one that they could agree on. And this is more basically about should you have told investors more about what was going on at the bank, so it's a little bit more cut and dry potentially on that issue.
Hillary.
Going back to customer service for a moment, I talked to an credit union analyst last week that I thought was interesting. They're optimistic that the credit union industry may stand to benefit from the Wells Fargo issue just because when banks take a hit, the credit unions say that's when they see a flow of customers come in. So that's an interesting thing to keep an eye on too.
And earlier this month, it was reported that Wells Fargo had given documents to the Justice Department related to its mortgage practices. The report said the bank was talking to multiple regulators about investigations in mortgage lending. Here we go again. Is that what this is?
Well, where we've seen Bank of America pay, billions and billions and a few of the other banks, I think Wells Fargo still hasn't potentially paid their big settlement on the packaging of these mortgages into bonds. And they've, I think, pushed back against the regulators and sounds like they're in their discussions.
Wow.
So that's more of a financial crisis leftover type issue. And they're a big mortgage lender. So
okay. You recently wrote, Dion, that the bank is tackling concerns about how the company handles ethics complaints filed by its workers, but that some employees say it's still not enough. I didn't know that banks did this or that they needed to do this. Is the filing of ethics complaints at banks by employees standard practice?
I think it's pretty common.
Really?
Yeah, and I think it's common as well with a lot of major companies. And the way that this is typically done is a company will hire a third party firm to conduct interviews with employees who call in with a complaint or who send in a complaint online or whatever the process is. It's not rare to see these ethics hotlines, as they're called. With Wells Fargo, we heard last week from Tim Sloan, the CEO, that they found quote unquote instances where the company may have retaliated against employees who filed ethics complaints, and so now they're using, I think, an outside group to investigate these claims of retaliation. But what employees have told me is some of them still don't feel comfortable filing an ethics complaint because the Wells Fargo has not articulated the changes that it says it's making to its ethics complaint process. So until the bank's more transparent, employees say they don't want to file a complaint, which is, I guess, troubling at a time when Wells Fargo is trying to change its culture. And if there's still some bad practices out there, the bank needs to hear about that.
Well, Tim Sloan evidently was not specific about some of the things they were doing, so specificity is lacking. But do you think that's just because they've never been through this before, and so they don't know exactly the words to use, or they don't see the need to be totally transparent with their own people?
Well, the company thanked me because I called them and said, hey, I'm working on this story about, your employees. They just heard Tim Sloan, today talking. This was Thursday last week, talking about, changes you're making to your ethics complaint process. But employees tell me they're still not comfortable. And the bank thanked me for giving that information and said, well, maybe we need to provide our employees with more information about the changes that we're making, and they said that they plan to do that now.
So some of these 5,000 employees that lost their jobs over this lack of – if they weren't selling these products to the satisfaction of their supervisors could have been because they also filed ethics complaints. Is that what we're hearing?
That's the concern, is that did you lose your job because you spoke up and said, hey, I don't like the way this sales practices are working, and then suddenly – You're out of a job a few weeks later, and maybe there was a rationale that you weren't getting your 10 accounts a day or something like that. But obviously, you shouldn't be firing people for raising concerns.
This really kind of fascinates me, and maybe I'm just naive. Well, certainly, I am. I know nothing about banking, but what kind of ethics violations might employees be concerned about at any bank on a day-to-day basis? What might they be seeing that they feel the need to call these ethics hotlines?
Oh, I think it can range from anything from something petty to my boss won't let me take Friday off or whatever, or they're making me work certain hours or I can't work from home, to something to they're front running on a trade, on Wall Street, that they're selling the stock themselves before they execute the trade for a customer. I mean, it could be all over the map, from something kind of personal in your work life to something that you think could to your boss, you know, ordering people to make fake accounts. I mean, it can be anything kind of all over the map,
I think. And one thing Wells Fargo encourages employees to report are any violations to its own code of conduct as well. So if employees are seeing, you know, people not doing what the code of conduct says you should do, you should report that to the ethics line.
So heretofore, do we know what the response, if you called the ethics line and had a valid ethics complaint, was it investigated by the bank? Was it covered over by the bank? Did the bank take retaliation on everybody, some people, only the people who reported ethics violations with regard to these bogus accounts? Do we know anything about that?
The bank has said it hasn't found any incidents so far that would be deemed inappropriate, but they're still looking into it. Obviously, it's very early still, so things may come out later, but I guess we'll find out more.
Okay. One complaint that came up, Mike, is that some of the people who lost their jobs also had securities license. And if you lose your job with a securities license, you have to have a report made to FINRA, the regulatory agency, that says why you were fired. And so there was employees who on their record suddenly it says they were fired because they opened up a fake account or a credit card that wasn't wanted. And Elizabeth Warren has gotten in on that and said, were these reports done to retaliate against an employee to hurt their career going forward? So that's another wrinkle to the retaliation issue.
Tim Sloan, who is the new CEO, replacing John Stumpf, is an insider. He's been with the bank a long time. Mary Mack, the new head of retail banking, is kind of an insider, as we've already talked about. Most of the senior executives have been with the bank for 20 years. But 5,000 employees were fired because of their involvement. A number of regional presidents have remained. Can you transform a culture of any organization with insiders at the top? Or do you have to bring in outsiders? Is it common practice to keep insiders at the helm? Because these banks are complicated entities. Not everybody can run them. They're so complicated now. Does that require that insiders stay?
You know, there's an argument to do it both ways. I mean, you look at Bank of America and what happened with Countrywide and Merrill Lynch and all the fallout around that. You know, what did they do? You know, Ken Lewis left, Brian Moynihan, an insider, was promoted and remains, mm-hmm. you know, remains at the head of the bank. There are other examples of, you know, corporate scandals and corporate, you know, problems where the opposite happened. Warren Buffett recently, you know, he kind of broke his silence last week on this, and he endorsed Tim Sloan.
Yeah.
So that's good for Tim Sloan's reputation.
He's the largest shareholder.
He's the largest Berkshire Hathaway is the largest single shareholder. So it remains to be seen whether, you know, Sloan is going to be able to turn the culture around. But you're right. I mean, this is a guy with more than 20 years at the bank. You know, he was chief financial officer from 2011 to 2014, which was kind of in the middle of all this scandal. Some people have said that, you know, maybe a CFO, he had some visibility into this. But, you know, John Stumpf also said that Tim Sloan's the right guy. It's just going to be a matter of time. And, of course, there's still congressional investigations into this. Lawmakers are asking, repeatedly asking questions about what did Tim Sloan know? When did he know it? And the board is doing an investigation of this as well. So I think there's still some questions about Tim Sloan's what he knew and when.
It's a fair question to ask. I think industry watchers I talked with said John Stumpf really did have to go for this company to move forward. There was just too many concerns out there, too many questions out there about what he knew. So someone knew how to take that place. But one, I guess, benefit that people I've talked to have said of having an insider come up is they know the business really well. It doesn't create a lot. It doesn't create even more uncertainty, and that's, you know,
but
financial industry hates uncertainty.
But if you want to turn an organization around or take it in a new direction, it may be helpful to have somebody who knows the organization and the talent within that organization,
right,
to stay at the helm, even if you're replacing the other guy at the helm. But this is about changing the culture of an organization, and this guy is steeped in the culture of the organization.
It's definitely a big challenge. I mean, because, you know, you didn't talk to a Wells Fargo executive for very long, and they didn't bring up their culture and their values and their code of ethics and everything, and it really has just kind of shattered that whole image.
Who should care more about this, the stockholders or the employees?
Both.
Okay. There's lingering populist anger at a lot of things, but certainly at the big banks, and this probably doesn't help. But the fact is that they didn't bring any outsiders in to fix this. Is that a mistake, considering the anger that's being directed at banks by ordinary rank-and-file citizens?
It's potentially a problem. I mean, certainly Elizabeth Warren is pushing for more
change. I mean, do these television commercials and these newspaper ads work in the face of that?
I guess we'll find out. I mean, I think if you're certainly a directly affected employee or customer, you're probably not – your mind's probably not changed. But I think if you're maybe not changed, at least you feel like they're trying, I guess.
Has there been customer fallout aside from the customers that were affected directly by these bogus accounts? Have they lost customers? Do we know if – people are reluctant to go there to open new accounts as opposed to some other bank?
Well, in September, customer visits to bankers within branches fell from September of last year. So there has been some impact on their business. We will find out this week on Thursday what happened in October as far as their activity in their branches. There's been some impact. The dollar value of all that is not much in the grand scheme of things. But again, we'll get some October numbers.
That's true. It is early. But anecdotally, I have talked with a lot of CEOs of smaller regional and community banks who have said they have seen a lot of customers coming in saying they have concerns about their unnamed big bank they are customers of. So we'll see.
Going back to this, whether or not this is criminal activity, once again, we see a bank doing not good things, and nobody has been prosecuted, much less gone to jail. Does this look good at the government level?
No, I mean, I think it's raised a lot of issues of, once again, why aren't the actual individuals getting in trouble? And the argument's always that these cases are complicated, they take a lot of work, they're hard to put together. And is there actual criminal intent? And so we do have prosecutors in Charlotte and San Francisco looking at this. So potentially something could come from it, but obviously hasn't happened much in the past.
If something did come from it, let's just say somebody goes to jail. Does that help? Does that act as a deterrent at other banks on other issues down the road? Or is it just something that will be quickly forgotten as we move on to the next thing?
I think jail time would be a big deterrent. I mean, we haven't seen a whole lot of that, and that's it's one thing to claw back compensation, and these executives still have millions of dollars in compensation, that hasn't been touched. So they're still doing okay relatively, but to go to jail is a totally different ball of wax.
What did executives who left the bank lose in terms of compensation and stock rewards in these clawbacks? There were two that come to mind, Kerry Tolstead and also John Stumpf. What did they lose?
I think Stumpf...
They're not on food stamps, are they?
Well, I mean, I think Stumpf had to forego, I want to say, $41 million, and I think Tolstead was $19 million.
Is $41 million his annual compensation, or is
no? That's retirement. That's retirement benefits. That's some unvested stock. The same mix applies for Kerry Tolstead. And then they aren't being paid a bonus for the rest of this year, and Stumpf was going to forego his salary, but of course that's a moot issue now.
So we only have 45 seconds left, and most of us aren't offered any kind of stock options when we are as an employee. So what is an unvested stock option? What does that mean?
So you're awarded stock that you really can't do anything with, you can't touch. It's actually not in your hands until certain things happen. That could be maybe the company needs to meet certain performance metrics over time, and when those metrics are met, then you can touch your stock.
And are you given the stock free of charge, or are you given an opportunity to buy it at a much lower rate than the public?
Well, in some cases, you have the right to buy a stock at a certain price. So, yes, that does apply.
That's Dion Roberts is with the Charlotte Observer. We're coming right back at Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Nexen Pruitt, over 190 lawyers helping companies meet business challenges in court and at the deal table from Charlotte and 7 other Carolina locations. Next challenge, next level, Nexen Pruitt. And Blumenthal Performing Arts presenting A Gentleman's Guide to Love and Murder, a tale of love and murder musical comedy straight from New York City. November 24th through December 4th at Knight Theater. Tickets available at 704-372-1000. The president has a lot of authority over the government, but also faces constraints from the courts, Congress, and existing laws. So, today on the Diane Rehm Show, in 20 minutes at 10 o'clock, guest host Susan Page and a panel of guests talk about what Trump can and cannot do on his signature campaign promises, including trade, climate, and immigration. That's coming up on WFAE. And if you'd like to join our conversation on board the Wells Fargo wagon, email us at charlottetalks@wfae.org. Search for WFAE on Facebook or get to us through Twitter at Charlotte Talks.
It's your world. We help you explore it.
I pledge to every citizen of our land that I will be president for all Americans.
It's your community. We help you understand it.
Although Republicans kept the supermajority, they lost 2 seats in Mecklenburg County.
Morning Edition on WFAE is an essential way to start your day and stay connected to your world. Listen weekday mornings from 5 to 9 on 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins with Rick Rothacker, who's an investigative reporter with the Charlotte Observer, Dion Roberts, the banking reporter there, Hillary Burns, banking reporter for the Charlotte Business Journal. James in Charlotte writes, and he asked about the concept of deferred prosecution when discussing jail time for the offenders. Can anybody talk about that? I've never heard of that term.
Well, that's been an issue that's came up even with Wachovia. They had an issue where they were accused of allowing drug smugglers to use accounts and move money around. And what they'll do is, instead of prosecuting you criminally and putting people in jail and potentially putting your company out of business, we'll say you were guilty of this. If you make all your reforms and fix things, we won't put you in jail. And that happened with Wachovia. The concern is, if you remember Arthur Anderson, they basically prosecuted and then the company disintegrated. So the thinking is, if we prosecute a financial firm, which is really just about confidence and trust in people, it'll destroy the whole company if we do this.
And David on Facebook says, have executive bonuses been tied to these phony accounts? Well, they were in the past, right? Is that part of the problem?
Well, the bank has touted its ability to cross-sell, and it's measured that very closely. To what degree executive compensation was tied directly to those cross-sell numbers? I mean, it's kind of hard maybe to separate all that out, but, you know.
But if you're paying bonuses to the rank-and-file employees for selling these.
Oh, sure.
Surely you as the manager are getting something, too.
No question.
And up the chain.
No question the rank-and-file.
I think the higher-ups bonuses are based on a lot of stuff, you know, stock performance, profits, and probably how well their business does.
Mary Mack, the new head of retail banking, is in the midst of designing a new compensation plan that you referred to. There we go, Dion, a few minutes ago. This new compensation plan would replace these bonuses that people got for selling these products. And she was asked if the bank is considering reducing the number of branches it operates. And that's on the table. Why?
I don't think it's – yeah, right. And we don't know exactly what the bank's plans are going to be around that. But, you know, we've seen other banks, particularly Bank of America, reduce its branch footprint in recent years. Branches are costly, and banks right now are under extreme pressure to reduce costs, with in part because interest rates remain so low. For Wells Fargo, up until now, the focus has been on sell, 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 and the branches enable them to do that. If you take the focus off of selling products, do the branches become less profitable over time, and do you need as many? And that's the question that the bank is going to have to answer.
So that across the industry, branches are decreasing just because fewer people are walking into branches because of all the mobile banking apps and whatnot. So
fewer employees in the future probably because there are fewer branches.
Probably.
Yeah, I mean,
and the nature of the branches might change.
You look at the thousands of people less that Bank of America has. A lot of that has come out of the consumer bank, and they've said there's more to come. You don't need as many people.
Prior to the election, John Stumpf, who was the former CEO, was on Capitol Hill twice, and he took a particular tongue lashing from Elizabeth Warren, who really has a tough time with the banking industry, and she's taking it out on him. But the Republicans will now be in charge. So has she been neutered? Will that committee, the Senate Banking Committee, be more lenient?
Well, she's in the minority now and certainly kind of stole the show at the hearing. So she's got that strong voice. Certainly if Hillary Clinton wins, who knows if she ends up being Treasury Secretary or something.
Hillary's not going to win.
Yeah.
That's pretty much done.
No, if she would have won.
It's been in all the papers.
No. If she would have won, she would have been Treasury Secretary. So it neuters her in that way, I guess.
So in late October, Senators Warren and two other Democratic senators wanted answers about the performance of Wells' outside auditor, KPMG. to ask how it could have missed these illegal sales tactics. What is the disposition of that? Where does that stand?
We don't know much yet. I'm sure the real question is whether the bank will make its own internal investigation public, the independent investigation its board is doing. I think that if that is made public, we will know more answers. But at this point, we don't know much.
And will there still be pressing to get that information from KMPG by the Senate Banking Committee going forward, given the fact that we're about in less than 2 months change administrations?
It's hard to say. I mean, like Dion was saying, this has been sort of a bipartisan outcry against Wells Fargo.
But now you have a billionaire builder who's going to be the president of the United States. He must have relationships with banks.
He does, although I guess it sounds like—
That's not meant
like,
to be a pejorative comment. It's just probably a fact.
It sounds like he has good and bad relationships. He's had, like any business person, sometimes you owe the bank, and you're not happy with that. But obviously you need money from your bank as well.
Because as soon as he was elected, bank stocks— went up. Mm-hmm. In fact, Bank of America is over $20 a share. When was the last time it was $20 a share? Anybody know?
2008. They were on the downslide then, but still since 2008.
And we had we had a Wells Fargo economist and several investment folks on this show last week in the aftermath of the election results coming out. And they all said that under a President Trump, we should expect bank stocks to do well. So what do we know, if anything, about how a Trump administration would deal with the banking industry? Anything? Any clues at all?
Bankers are very optimistic. The ones I've talked to are hopeful that their regulation burdens will decrease, that Trump will do something about Dodd-Frank, which he has said he will dismantle. We'll see if that happens. It is 2,300 pages of legislation, and it's taken years to implement. So probably the load will lessen, and that's what bankers are hopeful for. So,
you were on this program last time we talked about this, and as was Nancy Bush, who is a banking analyst, and she says that if Trump's plans to cut taxes and spend on infrastructure come to fruition, we can expect a rise in interest rates to counteract inflation, and that the rise in rates would be good for banks because they make money on interest, right? Mm-hmm. But don't they have to pay out more interest? Is it not balanced?
They make their money off that spread between what they're getting and what they pay, and they can control paying you less on your savings account while the interest rate goes up on what you owe them on your mortgage or your home equity loan. So they're able to manage that spread, and it's so low. There's so little to manage right now. So Bank of America certainly would benefit a lot from that, as well as Wells Fargo.
I think Trump is a wild card, and there's so much question about what he's actually going to do. What is the President Trump going to do versus what the candidate Trump said? Over the long term is really when we've got to look here. I think short term you're seeing bank stocks rise because of the hope of interest rates rising again. They've only risen once, which was last December, since the financial crisis. If interest rates rise, that'd be good for banks' net interest margins. But there's also the concern about, trade. And, if we get into a trade war, combined with all these other things, tax cuts, corporate tax cuts, all this stuff, I'm hearing now that there could be stagflation in the coming years, which wouldn't be good for our economy and potentially wouldn't be good for U.S. banks over the long term.
Why would banking stocks rising under the Trump administration, why would a rise in interest rates necessarily cause inflation? Simply because the cost of money is going up, so everything goes up?
I think that's right, yeah. Eventually, if the economy goes up, you see inflation.
So if the borders are closed or we have these trade sanctions put in place, the cost of products goes up. The cost of money goes up.
There's a lot of kind of push and pull.
If your income doesn't go up, then you're going to be in worse condition than we are right now, where you can buy something that was made in China at Walmart for practically nothing. That's going to go away?
It's hard to say. I mean, I think there's a lot of push and pulls in this economy where, deregulation could help the banks, but then an international trade war could hurt the banks. If you talk to Hugh McCall, is always very fond of saying that the Bank of America is just a reflection of the economy. And so if the economy is doing well, Bank of America is going to do well. No matter what they do, if the economy is poor, Bank of America is not going to do that well.
So a listener wrote us to say that this happens at other banks too, this cross-selling. They would cross-sell customers with brokerage accounts and open credit cards that customers were unaware of that had $300 annual fees. smaller group of customers targeted, but he said customers would call after that first year when fees would hit and they'd go ballistic. Bonuses were based on these accounts, so it's not unique to Wells. He referenced brokerage accounts. It seems to me that people who have brokerage accounts would not be good targets for this kind of a practice because they would in fact go ballistic. I would go ballistic. This really happens in brokerage accounts where they open credit card accounts and buy securities and things like that without you knowing it, to which there are fees attached? Really?
Well, probably not buying securities, but that's part of the whole cross-selling is we have this army of brokers out there who are already selling you mutual funds and stocks and bonds. Why don't we do your mortgage for you? Why don't we get you a credit card? We have this great bank right across the hall. And so I think
that does happen. It's happened to me, and I don't see anything wrong with that. What's wrong with that?
Well, I think if it's done fairly, that's fine. I mean, I think that's the whole idea behind these supermarket banks where they can do everything.
Mm-hmm. As long as the customer's interest is at the first and foremost.
So. As long as you're the final decider and as long as you have been explained what the pros and cons to it are, then I don't see anything wrong with it. But if you're unaware of it, that's where the problem is, right? Okay. Does that really happen all that much? I mean, really? Or do we know?
Well, you know, I've done some reporting about the, you know, some of the brokerage employees who allegedly opened brokerage products that customers didn't ask for. I did a story where, you know, one of the customers we talked to said that an annuity was opened on behalf of her husband and she didn't authorize it. And so, you know, that's an example of, you know, again, a brokerage employee maybe doing something that wasn't approved of by a customer. I don't think that the brokerage activity, again, we don't know, to what degree, you know, there may have been questionable practices there. You know, Tim Sloan has said that, you know, they've looked at other parts of the bank and they haven't seen the same kind of issues that they have on the retail side. Mm.
There are also other unknowns with regard to the incoming Trump administration and how they're likely to act about banking regulation, which we've alluded to. Mr. Trump has mentioned bringing back Glass-Steagall, which prevented commercial banks from also doing investment banking. If he were to do that, what would that mean for banks like Bank of America, which bought Merrill Lynch, et cetera?
He did mention that during his campaign, and that's pretty inconsistent with what he's saying now about dismantling the Dodd-Frank Act, which came after the 2008 financial crisis. But the Glass-Steagall Act did separate investment banking and commercial banking.
That was gotten rid of during the Clinton administration?
No, that, yes, 1999.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah. But it was put in place during the Great Depression.
Right.
And, you know, that's what Bank of America, all these big banks, that is what they are now. They're the supermarkets of banking, as we alluded to earlier. So people have come out close to Trump and said, you know, he probably won't do that now, but we'll see.
What would that mean for customers? What would that mean for banks?
It depends. If you just go to a bank branch, that's all you do, it probably won't matter that much. Interesting thing is, I think the thought is that the Wall Street investment banking is the evil stuff. We need to break that away from the bread and butter lending and Main Street. But here we have Wells Fargo. We're talking about a very Main Street kind of scandal. So I think both parts of the banks can have problems. And after the financial crisis, the investment banking side actually helped Bank of America a lot. It gave them a lot of money when a lot of other things weren't going well. So it's a complicated thing to try to pull off.
The Dodd-Frank Wall Street Reform and Consumer Protection Act, that's the name of it, came into existence in the wake of that financial meltdown. Is that likely to survive? Particularly since I would think that Donald Trump does not particularly like Elizabeth Warren.
There are a lot of questions right now about what will happen to the CFPB. I think that a lot of bankers would like to see it go away or at least have more regulation.
What does it do to them?
Well, I think that a lot of them argue that they don't answer to anyone, that there's not that's the main concern, that the CFPB doesn't answer to anyone.
Does it protect consumers in any way from banks that are considered too big to fail? Isn't Dodd-Frank one of the reasons we have these stress tests that banks have to take periodically to see if they have enough assets to support the loans they've made, et cetera?
There is an aspect of that that's part of Dodd-Frank, and there's international regime that looks at capital, and the idea is that you need to have enough capital to support your loans if things go awry.
And banks do say they have become overregulated in this post-recessionary period. In the light of what we just uncovered about Wells Fargo, how can they say that with a straight face?
Well,
you're grimacing at me.
Well, I think that you're always going to hear that from businesses, no matter what's going on, that there's too much regulation. I think the one thing they can probably say with a straight face is that it was the LA Times that was first unveiled this, not regulators. So I think that's almost, as much as it was a win for the CFPB, it sort of boosted the argument on a Republican side that, hey, look, this agency didn't even uncover this problem in the first place, so what's the point of spending all this money if they can't find problems anyway?
And it is harder for community banks to keep up with all this regulation when they're completely different businesses than these big banks we're talking about, and they have fewer people and less resources, so it is harder for them to keep up with all this mounting regulation.
So perhaps community banks should be under a different set of rules?
Maybe.
That's potentially perhaps one of the easiest or the simplest things that comes out of a Dodd-Frank change is, do you lower the bar for the smaller community banks who aren't probably likely to, you know, blow up the financial system or the world economy.
So how did all of this, how did this Wells Fargo situation, and how did these banking, the potential of changing banking regulations, how has it affected, how might it affect Charlotte employees and the city of Charlotte? Because we are a banking town.
Well, you know, you've seen a lot of compliance people and attorneys get hired in Charlotte and elsewhere in the banking industry because of the regulations. So you could almost argue that the regulations have helped, you know, boost employment in certain parts of the banks. I think, you know, if you go along with the line that regulatory costs have hurt banks' profitability, you know, certainly fewer regulations would mean maybe the potential to hire more employees. One thing that you hear a lot from banks is that they haven't been able to hire a lot of frontline employees because they've been hiring all these compliance people. So maybe you see more people on the front lines get hired at banks. Who knows?
Dion Roberts, banking reporter for The Observer. Rick Rothacker, whose name I cannot say this morning, investigative reporter for the paper and the author of Banktown, The Rise and Fall, or the Rise and Struggles of Charlotte's Big Banks, and Hillary Burns, banking reporter for the Charlotte Business Journal. Thank you all for the hour.